Tonight, inside Comey's firing, NBC News has learned stunning details of how it all went down amid disbelief from the FBI to the halls of Congress, where many believe Comey was pushed out because he wouldn't end the Russia investigation. Sources say Comey asked for more resources for the Russia probe days before he was dismissed. Tonight, growing calls for a special prosecutor as the president meets with Putin's top diplomat. Toxic tunnel, a delicate mission after the sudden collapse of the nation's most contaminated nuclear waste site. Sudden impact, a new warning tonight. How many kids are being rushed to the ER not wearing helmets when they hit the road? And inspiring America, the kindness of strangers is in the mail. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening to our viewers in the West. The White House is taking fire from inside and out tonight over President Trump's sacking of FBI Director James Comey amid questions of how it all went down and a possible ulterior motive. The White House maintains Comey was axed for sloppy handling of the Clinton email investigation. Today, President Trump spoke publicly on the matter.
Mr. President, why did you fire Director Comey?
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
But the president's explanation is not going over well inside the FBI and among some members of Congress, where there is suspicion Comey was let go because of his investigation of the Trump campaign and possible collusion with the Russians. Tonight, congressional sources say Comey was seeking to step up his investigation at the time of his firing. As we also learn new details of how his dismissal unfolded, our justice correspondent Pete Williams starts our coverage.
James Comey has said nothing publicly since his firing, remaining home. But FBI insiders tell NBC News that many at FBI headquarters believe he was fired because he would not end the Russia investigation, something the president clearly wanted over, tweeting 2 days ago, "When will this taxpayer-funded charade end?" The Justice Department and the White House say the final steps in firing Comey, who hustled back to Washington after getting the word in Los Angeles, came just 2 days ago at the White House. Administration officials say President Trump met with Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and said he wanted to talk about his concerns that Comey should be fired. Rosenstein said he had reached the same conclusion, officials say, and agreed to put his thoughts on paper, which became the three-page memo blasting Comey's handling of the Clinton email investigation. Congressional sources say Comey asked Rosenstein last week for more resources for the Russia investigation, but a Justice Department official says that request was never made. A White House spokeswoman says the president has been thinking since he took office that Comey should go, believing in part that Comey was not respected by the agency he led.
The rank and file of the FBI had lost confidence in their director. Accordingly, the president accepted the recommendation of his deputy attorney general to remove James Comey from his position.
Current and former agents say that's not true, that while some thought Comey mishandled the Clinton email investigation, they didn't lose confidence in him.
He's a good man. He's well-intentioned. He's well thought of. The law enforcement community thinks very highly of him. And it's just a terrible thing that's happened here.
People throughout the FBI are in shock at the firing, which came with no warning. As for the investigation of Russia's hacking during the election and whether any Trump campaign associates were involved, that work goes on, but some former officials say the firing casts a cloud.
If you're an investigator, you have to ask yourself, how much evidence do I need to support my claims at this point? When will I be believed or not be believed?
Some in Congress say by playing a role in the firing, Attorney General Sessions violated his pledge to keep hands off any investigations involving the campaign. But officials say it was a personnel decision about Comey's leadership, not about any investigation. For now, DOJ is looking at five candidates for interim FBI director, including the current acting director, Lester.
All right, Pete Williams tonight. Pete, thanks. Many inside the FBI were shocked by Comey's firing, including Comey himself. But tonight, NBC News has learned that his dismissal came so abruptly, many within the White House were also caught by surprise. NBC News Chief White House Correspondent Hallie Jackson has the timeline of how it all went down.
Tonight, new details on the 24-hour scramble inside the White House after the decision to dismiss James Comey that stunned even insiders. By 5 p.m. Tuesday, an increasingly fed-up president had made up his mind to fire his FBI director. But in the moments before 5:40, when the news broke, a top White House source tells NBC's Stephanie Ruhle some key aides hadn't even heard about the firing. Instead, they watched it flash across cable, growing angry, not about what the president did, but how it was revealed, frustrated by the lack of strategy. By 6, the president had called 9 senators, but not Comey, who was in California.
No matter how you fire someone, it's never an easy process. And he felt like following protocol was the best thing to do.
President Trump, who used to fire people for a living,
You're fired.
Instead, dispatched his longtime security head to hand deliver a letter to FBI headquarters. One former senior intelligence officer describes the dismissal as humiliating, instant execution. By 9 p.m., White House advisors, surprised by the blowback, blitz TV in split-screen coverage that showed Comey's motorcade heading back to LAX as he flew off, literally, into the sunset.
Because he wasn't doing a good job, very simply. He was not doing a good job.
That's not what the press secretary said a week ago.
The president has confidence in the director.
Now?
The president had lost confidence in Comey from the day he was elected.
On May 3rd, Sean came out and said the president has full confidence in his FBI director. Why did he say that?
Look, I think, again, he's questioned Director Comey's reason for needing to stay at the FBI.
But not publicly FBI, and not recently.
Is it too late now to ask him to step down?
No, it's not too late, but, you know, I have confidence in him.
These are the kind of mistakes that were made during Watergate. They are careless. They are thoughtless. They're not well planned. And you get repercussions when you don't think things out and act accordingly.
The president meeting today with Henry Kissinger, Richard Nixon's former right-hand man, perhaps thumbing his nose at those Watergate comparisons from critics and lashing out at, quote, phony hypocrites questioning his decision, defiant and on defense, along with his vice president.
The president took strong and decisive leadership here.
Some details still aren't clear, like the 3 separate occasions on which President Trump says Comey told him he wasn't personally being investigated, and who initiated those talks.
I'm not going to get into the specifics of their conversations.
And what specifically changed from President Trump's talk on the trail?
It took guts for Director Comey to make the move that he made.
To today.
Can people take at face value what the president says about personnel issues like this?
Absolutely. You can take full confidence in the words of the president.
Tonight, a senior White House official describes a small inner circle looped in on the president's thinking. The vice president, son-in-law Jared Kushner, and White House counsel Don McGahn, all of them backing a decision that ultimately, as has happened again and again in this administration, was the president's and the president's alone. Lester?
Allie Jackson at the White House, thanks. And Comey's firing triggered criticism from both sides of the aisle and reignited calls from Democrats for an independent special prosecutor to take over the investigation into possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russians to influence the election. We get more from NBC's Kristen Welker.
Amid mounting outrage on Capitol Hill tonight, some lawmakers are questioning the country's very foundation.
Do you see this as a constitutional crisis?
Absolutely.
This is a stress test of our constitutional democracy, what we're living in right now.
And it's not just Democrats. An increasing number of Republicans are joining the chorus of critical voices. Richard Burr chairs the Senate Intelligence Committee.
The timing and the reasons for this decision made little sense to me. And I don't think I've heard anything since last night that would clarify that in any way.
The White House's timing here was less than impeccable.
I think a lot of us are still puzzled as to the timing.
At least 7 Senate Republicans have expressed skepticism or outright anger, but the Senate's top Republican is standing by the president.
Today we'll no doubt hear calls for a new investigation, which could only serve to impede the current work being done to not only discover what the Russians may have done.
House Speaker Paul Ryan also defending Mr. Trump.
It is entirely within the president's role and authority to relieve him, and that's what he did.
And tonight, Democrats are demanding the Department of Justice appoint a special prosecutor to take over the investigation into Russia's meddling in the U.S. election, some even threatening to try to block Trump's pick for the next FBI director until one is appointed.
I will vote against any confirmation of an FBI director
unless there is support for a special prosecutor.
Tonight, even the vice president is firing back.
The president and I remain confident that the committees in the House and the Senate that are looking into every aspect of issues that arise out of last year's election will be able to do their work.
So where does Congress go from here?
Congress is not known for their multitasking abilities, so as long as the Russia cloud remains this dark and this large, it will hang over official Washington and make it very difficult to do much governing.
James Comey was scheduled to testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee tomorrow, but now the acting FBI director will appear in his place. Meanwhile, late tonight, that same committee issued a subpoena to ousted National Security Advisor Michael Flynn for documents related to the Russia probe. Lester.
Kristen Welker at the Capitol tonight. Thank you. We want to bring in our political director, the moderator of Meet the Press, Chuck Todd. Chuck, it's been a wild 24 hours. Lay it out for us. What would be the tipping point that would make a special prosecutor more likely?
Well, I think if it is somehow definitively proved that the reason the president fired Director Comey was Russia and not the reason that they give. Okay, that would be a tipping point situation. There seems to be enough vagary about that for now that Republicans are essentially, while they're not comfortable standing by the president right now, they're not dumping him overboard. You saw that today. You saw skepticism, but they're not yet there. Look, Democrats are going to call for a special prosecutor because it sounds good, but they actually, many of them don't necessarily want that because the Justice Department would have to appoint it if they ever got it, and it would erase all of the other investigations. You're more likely to see this, an independent commission styled after the 9/11 commission, because the Senate can collectively vote on that. That's where this could go, but I think you need one more incident before Republicans will climb on board.
All right. Chuck Todd, thank you. On the heels of the firing of the FBI director, the president had only one event listed on his public schedule today, a private meeting with Vladimir Putin's top diplomat, the Russian foreign minister, in the Oval Office. Our chief foreign affairs correspondent, Andrea Mitchell, has more.
Awkward timing for the White House. Russia's top diplomat visiting Washington, only hours after President Trump fires the FBI director, investigating possible links between the Trump campaign and Russia's election hacking. Does the Comey firing cast a shadow over your talks, gentlemen?
What's the fire? You're kidding.
Sergei Lavrov's joking response before heading to the White House, where all reporters were barred, but just official photographers let in. Russia's official news agency releasing more than 20 photos of the meeting from every angle. President Trump with the Russian foreign minister. President Trump with the Russian ambassador. A central figure in the controversy over fired National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. No pictures released yet by the White House. Not a lot was released about what they discussed, but we know they agreed on one thing. The Russia investigation is fake news. Vladimir Putin today, after skating in a celebrity hockey game, asked by CBS how Comey's firing will affect U.S.-Russia relations. There will be no effect, he says. We have nothing to do with that. President Trump is acting in accordance with his competence and in accordance with his law and constitution. Russia's foreign minister challenging U.S. reporters, saying, President Trump publicly says that all of it is false news. Given no proof, well, it's not serious. Democratic congressional investigators noting the irony.
You know, you can't make this stuff up. Lavrov, I have to say, I've noticed, is more consistently on point with the president's message than Sean Spicer is.
And the Russians also beat the White House to the punch today, announcing that the president and Putin will meet for the first time since Mr. Trump took office in Germany this summer in July at a summit. The White House will only say they're still talking about it. Lester.
Andrea Mitchell at the State Department tonight. Thank you, Andrea. Tomorrow I'll travel to the White House for the first interview with the president since his firing of the FBI director. It's an NBC News exclusive. We'll have it for you right here on NBC Nightly News. Still ahead tonight, we'll have more on the day's other headlines, including the dangerous operation at the largest nuclear waste site in the nation after a radioactive scare there. Also, child safety alert, a warning over something that sends 50 kids an hour to emergency rooms. Stay with us. We're back now with new developments in that radioactive scare at the largest nuclear waste facility in the nation. Today, workers at the Hanford nuclear site in Washington state took on a dangerous and delicate operation. NBC's Gadi Schwartz has the latest.
At the nation's most contaminated nuclear waste site, today pictures show a quick fix to a radioactive threat. Crews carefully filling a partially collapsed tunnel with soil. Inside those tunnels, train cars filled with toxic waste. Archive video shows those trains in the days they were used in processing weapons-grade plutonium.
It's like having Fukushima sitting in your backyard ready to go off.
The cars were sealed in tunnels to contain the radiation. Plans called for the government to clean out the tunnels by the year 2024, then pushing it back to 2042.
Anyone near the tunnel when it collapsed could get a lethal dose of radiation in a short period of time.
For now, the government says no radiation has been detected and safety is their top priority.
We're going to approach this slowly, safely, and methodically.
But former workers at the Hanford site say they've heard that before.
I was healthy as a horse until that day I got exposed.
John Swain worked at Hanford for over 30 years until he says he inhaled something that left him with brain damage. He is now hoping that the partial collapse will be a wake-up call, and those responsible for cleaning up Hanford will learn from the nuclear mistakes of its past. Gadi Schwartz, NBC News, Hanford, Washington.
When we come back here tonight, it's happened again. Another day, another brawl breaks out aboard a plane. We'll tell you what this one was all about when we come back. We're back now with a new warning about how many kids are seriously injured because they don't wear helmets and pads when riding around outside. According to new research, almost 1,200 kids are rushed to emergency rooms every day. Here's NBC's Tom Costello.
Tis the season for skateboards, skates, scooters, and bikes. But all those wheels are sending nearly 50 kids an hour to the ER, the most common injuries, broken bones, and abrasions. But 11% involve serious head injuries, concussions, and skull fractures. Jaden Rivera was 10 years old when he suffered a skull fracture after falling off his bike without a helmet. 3 days later, he was in the ER, lethargic and vomiting.
When I saw the CT scans, I saw the look in the doctor's eye that this was serious. He said we have to get him into surgery now before he dies.
Jaden was bleeding into his brain.
Fractures to their skull. And
Children's National Hospital ER Chief Rob Freistadt says kids' skulls are thinner and more vulnerable.
And so any injury that occurs at that point may damage parts of the brain that have not yet developed and prevent them from developing properly.
It can be permanent.
Absolutely. Lifelong.
But surprisingly, a new study finds 40% of parents surveyed say their kids don't always wear a helmet.
Meanwhile, as scooter-related injuries have jumped 40% in 10 years, fewer than 20% of parents say their kids are wearing knee, elbow, or wrist pads.
Doctors say everyone, especially kids, should always wear a helmet and protective pads. In Florida, doctors had to use wire mesh to repair Jaden's skull. He survived, but a helmet could have prevented it all. Tom Costello, NBC News, Washington.
In yet another incident caught on camera, a brawl aboard a Southwest Airlines plane after it landed in Los Angeles. The fist fight erupted Sunday when a man accused a woman sitting behind him of messing with his chair, police say. At one point, the brawling passengers fell over onto a flight attendant trying to break it up. One man was arrested and all that. When we come back, you've got mail. The healing power of the lost art of letter writing, inspiring America, is next. Finally, tonight, they're more and more rare in the age of email, but a handwritten letter is still a pretty powerful reminder that someone out there is thinking of you. And all across the country, folks are putting pen to paper to encourage strangers fighting the battle of their lives. NBC's Katie Beck has tonight's Inspiring America report.
My dear sister,
Stephanie Jones writes three letters a day.
Since your recent cancer diagnosis.
Engraving empathy to women she doesn't know.
You are in my heart. I thought.
But she knows their disease. Jones has beat cancer three times and has felt their same fears.
How will I ever do this? Do I have the strength and the courage? Of course you do.
Jones is one of thousands writing letters for a group called Girls Love Mail.
There's something they can do. They can pick up a pen.
Cancer survivor Gina Mulligan is the founder. Her idea, arming volunteers, school children to cancer survivors to help fight a stranger's battle with breast cancer.
Every day when I read the letters, I see the best in people.
Mulligan designed the charity not to raise money, instead to collect comfort, soul funding for those who feel just broke.
It's okay to cry. But remember to laugh, too.
Volunteer vetters see the letters first.
Stay strong and continue to be brave. You've got this.
Letters packaged and sent to hospitals nationwide over the last 6 years, reaching 80,000 women.
Even if you wrote one letter, you made a difference in that person's life.
Someone like Sherry Jerome receiving treatment at St. Jude Medical Center in Fullerton and a letter.
My message for you is simply two words. I care.
As you take your unique and Sir May's journey, my hand will virtually hold yours.
You are in my heart.
Stephanie.
From one hand.
That's wonderful.
To one heart. Katie Beck, NBC News, wow. Sacramento.
And we're going to end on that inspiring note. That's going to do it for us on this Wednesday night. I'm Lester Holt. We'll see you tomorrow night from Washington, where we'll have our exclusive interview with President Trump. Until then, for all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.